Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is August 30th, 2005. Today's session, Beyond Potluck, Feasts and Celebrations, hosted by Beatrice Ojikongas in the Fireside Room, disc number OJB-2005-02. Let's listen in.
Hit it. That's it, huh? Okay. I want to start thinking about feasts and festivals in a real poetic way after coming out of our poetry sessions. And I realized that talking about food and cooking is so hands-on and so practical. And so I wondered, started thinking about what's the purpose of even talking about feasts and festivals and foods, because this relates both to home and to churches and communities. And I really think to talk about it and to realize that food really encourages hospitality and togetherness and encourages community, and that's probably why we're really so interested in this. We have, I handed out some recipes here, and the recipes are from some things that we've done at church. I've been thinking about doing a book of recipes that would be sort of like not the home, the in-between, you know, between the hospitality of a hospital, say, or a restaurant, and home cooking. There's a whole gap in there where we really don't have much information. I think Jen and I were talking about that the other day in the bookstore, that there isn't really much in the middle. There's a book in the bookstore that is titled Ethics of Food, isn't that it? Or Food and...
we were talking about...
Yeah. You know, and I have that book at home, and I just thought, I looked at it and I thought, oh, that's so far out.
Yeah, you know, it's much more academic.
It's too academic, and yet this is a real slippery kind of spot to be in when you're talking about food and festivals and the biblical, you know, support for feasting. And the practical things that happen at home, you know, we're talking about cooking for friends and cooking for family. And then the fact that we don't really do much cooking. A lot of people don't do much cooking anymore either. So we're in a real, real kind of a different phase of life here. But let's go through these slides that I have. Feasts and festivals, in many ways, we celebrate with foods. And my illustrations are going to be what we do at First Lutheran in Duluth. And if you have ideas and can add to, you know, add other things, I think that would be great. We can discuss that too. Okay, come on. No, it's not. Oops, I need to go back one. We can't figure it out how to go back. Feasts and festivals. First of all, you step back and you say, most of the time when you think about a feast or a festival or a party or entertaining, it's going to be a holiday of some kind. Often we use it as a theme. What is a holiday? It really comes from the word holy day. And what are your personal holy days? Birthdays, anniversaries, or significant events. In Scandinavia, they celebrate name days. Have you come across that?
We have a Greek neighbor who just invited the whole block for his name day party. Yeah. A couple weeks ago.
Is name day like baptism?
Well, it used to be when you were baptized, you took on the name of the saint of the day. You know, the day that you're baptized. Now people are assigned a name by their parents or somebody, but that name usually has a root in a saint's day from the year. a saint's day from, it's designated. I think the day for Beatrice is December 10th.
Yeah, after Soterios had his, I looked mine up. All the Johns and Jans and Jeans are June 24th, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, it's a fun thing to know your own personal name day. One time, I have to tell this story, when we were in Finland, our friend Kaija Arika, you've recognized Arika Jewelry, and anyway, she... It's a lady they've gotten to know there, and it was her name day. She invited us over to her house for a big party. And I mean, she was a real kind of a flashy, she's a flashy kind of person, but she, you know, she invited everybody she knew to her house for her name day. And I said, you know, well, what about your birthday? Do you celebrate? Oh, no. We don't celebrate our birthdays until they're very significant, you know. So when you get the big zeros, that's when you celebrate your birthday and your name day. I asked about gifts. Is there any special food? Well, usually the food was, in this case, she didn't have any particular food, but just a lot of good stuff. And gifts are usually pretty simple things like a bouquet of flowers or a box of chocolates or something easy like that. And so I like that kind of simple tradition. But I think we'd have a lot of fun if we tried to celebrate our name days. Other than that, what are your personal holy days and how do you celebrate them? Do you cook something special or bake something special? Do you guys have things that you do on special days just that nobody else might do?
We have one for Thanksgiving. We have some very good friends who come from a neighboring island, and they spend about 4 days with us. And so the family all gets together, and everybody cooks. And beforehand, I have all the foods on hand, and then I put just little stickums on the refrigerator, and guys and the gals each take one, and everybody makes something so that the celebration is in the cooking as well as in the eating.
That's great. That's exactly the kind of thing that I've been trying to talk about here, and... you can do that in your home with your friends, or you can do it at church. Mm-hmm. You know, so that is a really good idea. Okay, other things that we celebrate that are national holidays, which are, it's pretty obvious: President's birthdays, Memorial Day, July 4th, Labor Day, and there are some other. There are more of them. I wrote a book called The Great Holiday Baking Book, and I did a lot of research into holidays throughout the year, and every month of the year has holidays, and it is really, it got to the point where I had so many holidays I had to cut some out. But I tried to pick out the ones that were the most fun to think about, and one of the holidays was that I did include was April 1st. And so what do you, so you start thinking, well, what do you make for April Fool's Day? Something that's a foolish, something's kind of silly. But I mean, sometimes
there's a dessert called a fool, isn't there?
Yeah, there is a dessert called a fool. Or you can make something like a mock apple pie or, you know, something like that. Whoops, gotta go back one. Here are some examples of the holidays that we, or the times at our church where we have a community meal, where we have people helping in the kitchen and doing a lot of the work. Stewardship meals are usually in October, although we started out with evening meals. We've done a variety of different things for stewardship. One thing that we did for about maybe 12 years in a row was, we have a big congregation, so what we did was we had stewardship meals 4 nights out of the week, Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and we had what we call the harvest soup pot. And we had people bring, for each person you'd bring like a cupful of vegetables ready for the soup pot. So it turned out that it was the most, we've done this, it's the same principle as the stone soup. Mm-hmm. And the first year, I think we cooked the soup to be served that night, but we found out it was a lot easier if people would take the, we would get the people that were kind of leaders in the church, bring the vegetables ready for the Sunday night meal on Saturday so that we could simmer that soup all day. And in a way, it's like it was symbolizing the leadership in the church kind of feeding the congregation. And then people would come and their vegetables would go into the next day's soup pot. And it went on until Wednesday, of course, we had vegetables for a soup pot, which we gave to the soup kitchen. And the symbolicness of that was really, really kind of neat. And I think people really got into that. We did that for several years in a row. But then you have to change it. You can't keep doing the same thing over and over again. You know, you've got to make changes. And so now we've gone to a brunch on Sunday morning for the stewardship.
Our church a couple times did meetings in homes for stewardship, mm-hmm. and then whoever's home. I think one year we just did dessert, and I think one year we actually did meals, and then so whoever's home, whoever was host would do the meal, and you know, we've got a really small congregation, so yeah. Yeah. Only took about eight houses to, it was, you know, six or eight people at each. Yeah.
We've done the home things too, and that's good because it gets people to open up their homes to others. The thing that happens when you're preparing a meal in the church kitchen and serving it to people, you know, to the congregation, you have this time together in the kitchen, mm-hmm. and we can't have too many of those events where we have people volunteering to come in the kitchen, because we get to know each other, and every so often we'll say, wow, if we wouldn't have been doing this, I wouldn't have gotten to know you. You know, in a bigger congregation, I guess this happens more, or where you've got people that are coming in, you know, you've got strangers, and you invite, you know, the new people to come in the kitchen and help cook, even for 15 minutes. And it's amazing how it kind of brings togetherness into the kitchen. We do a lutefisk, salmon, and meatball dinner the first Wednesday in December. They used to do that thing, the Brotherhood used to do it years ago. And they spent the whole day before the day of the lutefisk dinner covering the floor. They'd go to a bicycle shop and get bicycle boxes and cover the whole floor because they boiled the lutefisk. And it was a pretty smelly and messy affair. And one year, there was some, the city was, actually it was the, there was construction outside, of the, right near our church, and it kind of broke the gas lines. So they couldn't get the water to come to a boil. So that was the year they decided no more lutefisk dinners. And so it was about 5 years later that we reinstalled the dinner, and just touched the space bar, and we baked the lutefisk. Now it should come back on. We don't want that.
The computer screen's not coming on.
Huh?
The computer screen's not coming on.
How come that happened?
There you go. It's going to come on now.
Okay. No, it'll come on. Anyway, so we have reinstalled the lutefisk, salmon, and meatball dinner. Turns out we have a commercial fisherman in our congregation who goes up to Alaska to fish salmon every year. And he donates his first catch to this dinner. And it's really great stuff.
450 pounds.
450, usually 450 pounds, yeah. Or
of king salmon.
Yeah. Okay, then we do, I talked about this yesterday, Lenten Suppers during Lent. We do a global festival celebration in January because we have a lot of outreach things going on in South America, in El Salvador, in Africa, and in Russia, and where else do we, Japan. So we usually have a meal that reflects the foods of these areas. And then we have, you know, various kinds of buffets to honor and celebrate certain things happening. Like last year, we had a new pastor, and we honored him with a meal right at the church service. It was a. And then this last year, the Sunday before Lent, we had a Mardi Gras Sunday, and if the picture comes out okay, you'll see some of the food. Okay, whoops, go back. No, you probably don't have to see that too well. But here are some of the people shaping meatballs for the meatball dinner. Now you can go to the next one. We'll just flip through these kind of quickly. And the men get involved too, which is kind of fun because they not only help with the lutefisk dinner, but these guys are retired and we have a great lot of fun with them in the kitchen. Yeah, flip the next one. There's one of the gals who is into everything. Mary, on to the next. Here's a bunch of women that were baking breads, and so we really had, you can see all smiling faces, and we had a great time. Clarice and Doug, this is really coming out dark. And Brenda, our the president of the congregation.
They are not dark on this computer, but that's
what
it is.
There they are, just keep going. Bread makers. We have a variety of them.
Big machine.
Our machine on the right-hand side, and a great big flour bin on the left. And this has been fun. I've got some of our recipes I'm handing out to you. This is a little boy that the son of this gal who wanted Julie, who he wanted to learn how to bake bread, and so he was involved. Okay, just go on. When it looks like that, just go on.
They cleaned up after dark.
Yeah, they cleaned up after dark. Here's our serving line for the lutefisk dinner, and they, you know, the people who have, what do they call them? National costumes. the Norwegian costumes, they're wearing them. Although, and there's Dick right over there, not wearing a costume, just his apron. Okay, on to the next.
I like to be serving the lutefisk mm-hmm. in the serving lines because people get the potatoes and the meatballs and the salmon, and many of them try to slip by the lutefisk. And I say, oh, you forgot the lutefisk. No, no, no. Well, just a little piece. If you put milk sauce and the butter sauce on it, the white sauce and the butter sauce, it'll taste fine. No, no, no. And one lady a couple years ago, I said, don't you want to get to heaven? And she said, just like that, she said, there's got to be a better, quicker way.
And we had, the reason I put this in is that we serve 1,400 people, and we open it at 12, and it goes until 7 in the evening. And there are always the rushes, you know, when there's a whole big bunch of people. So then we have two lines, serving lines, and it goes really fast. And, I mean, it never fails. They'll say, well, we had a busload of 50 people that came through. You know, oh, really? I didn't know that. You know, you'd think it would have been a real backup, but it wasn't, because you can open up the line and we serve real quickly and people have a good time. Here's another. This is a just a go on brunch.
I say these really look nice up here on the screen.
Yeah.
Why don't you look this direction?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, there are only four of us. You can just
we could all hover around the screen. Here's the celebration lunch we had for our new pastor, and Dave Rogodsky smoked some of his salmon. He has a way of brining the salmon and then and cutting it into little cubes and then smoking it, and it is really delicious.
Maple syrup.
Oh yeah, he makes a maple syrup glaze for the salmon. Okay, and then that doesn't show. It's a bread basket, and there's another. There's our. I don't know if anyone here knows Shirley Wuchter. She's not standing on the right-hand side there, but we have a whole bunch of really fun things that people, simple foods. This was breads and spreads, and those little white dots are fresh mozzarella on top of oven-dried tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we do that kind of thing in our Lenten suppers. This would show up much better Mardi Gras Sunday. You know, the reason I put this in is because of the color theme of Mardi Gras is green and gold and purple. Yeah. But we had green and gold grapes on the left. I mean, green and purple grapes on the left, and the gold carrot salad. Here's a bunch of the people in the kitchen making bread. That came out a little better. And the buffet, here's our smoked salmon and with a wild rice. This was serving the whole congregation, so we had backups, and people came in to a line. And that doesn't show too well, but it's a pretty nice picture of breads, you know, if it would show up. Okay. And spreads. I've got in my handout to you, I've got spreads, but this one I even simplified more. What I did was I just took chunks of cream cheese and then put pesto over the top, and we had a cranberry topping on top of cream cheese, and so people would take their bread and they'd put a topping on it, and we had hummus I can't remember what else was on that menu. It's on the computer.
Bread sticks back there.
Bread sticks, but can you see them back there? Anyway, this was our celebration lunch for our new pastor. On to the next. There we are. We've talked about the way we set up for the Lenten suppers. We serve like 350 people in 15 minutes or less. And we'll have three long serving tables. At the end of the serving table, we'll have two stacks of plates. And that means we'd have six lines of people going through. And then a basket in the middle, and people throw in their whatever they want to put in. Here's the menu for installation of Rickland. The breads, we had Icelandic multigrain bread, cranberry cardamom bread, Norwegian bread, wheat bread, breadsticks. The spreads, cream cheese with toppings, basil pesto, sundried tomato pesto, tapenade, and lingonberry preserves. And that was so simple to do, because we just put chunks of the cream cheese in them and then topped it with these items. And then we had hummus and a bruschetta, which is just chopped up tomatoes and some seasonings and things. And then salads, we had a wild rice, barley, black bean, and salad, with orange dressing, and spinach and mushroom salad, which I mentioned yesterday. The honey dressing is so simple. It's just equal parts of honey and cider vinegar. And the carrot daikon salad. And this was, this kind of hit the newspaper even in Duluth. Well, they're eating daikon at First Lutheran. Smoked salmon and maple syrup sundaes for dessert. So that was our menu. Go then to all the people, and I would like to add, and feed them. Because if you feed them, they'll come. Mm-hmm. Go on. Food and public ministry, bidden or not bidden, God is present. And that is, you know, I've been reading Practice of the Presence of God by Brother Lawrence. And that's why I put this up here, because it hit me. The church exists for the whole world, not just to enrich its own internal life. When it is working properly, the church is in mission to the world. Feasts and celebrations are one vehicle to accomplish that. On to the next. Okay, that kind of goes, this is what I was going to stop here and go on to the hospitality of bread tomorrow, but I won't be able to do PowerPoint or any kind of presentation, so I thought I'd go through some of these things here today. I love this. Blessed art thou, Yahweh, our God, King of the universe, who brings forth bread from the earth. And I believe that's a table prayer. I'm sure you heard this when Christ walked on earth. It comes in Ezekiel 4:9. I haven't heard anyone ever refer to this before, but there is a reference to making bread. You take wheat, barley, beans, lentils, millet, and fitches, whatever that is. But that was translated into different kinds of beans and beans, and put them in one vessel and make bread thereof, according to the number of days thou shalt lie upon thy side, 390 days. I have a recipe that I made. I'm calling it Ezekiel bread, and just for our audiovisual here, these are the combinations of grains, and they're all in there. Made my suitcase really heavy. And here's the ground up bread. So we'll use the this tomorrow to make some and what we call Ezekiel bread. And it's got honey in it and oil for shortening. So, but I don't have that recipe duplicated quite yet. Okay, let's see. Let's go on to the next one here. Oops, I went too fast. But that, I think that was kind of dark. Yeah, go on to the next one. Just nice picture of bread. Here is just a part of the bread that we bake for our Lenten supper. And this happened to be the last day before, the last Lenten supper before Easter, and it was a pretzel-shaped bread. And we one thing we've done with kids is make pretzels before Easter. Have any of you done that or heard of it? Pretzel, the word pretzel comes from breast, it's ancient prayer bread, because the pretzel is this shape. And it's an appropriate thing to, a fun thing to do with kids just before Easter, because you know, it's, well, it just works right in with the Easter theme. So we made big pretzels and we made little pretzels. So, and then we made lefse, which we're going to do, we're going to start making the lefse tomorrow, the first part of this the dough, and then we're going to roll it out on Thursday. This is, Tom Bowman, our good friend, is rolling out lefse here, and the picture is much clearer on my computer. We could all hover around there and look at it. Do the next one. It's more lefse. There he is lifting the, and the, that's Mary, his wife, and her brother. No, his name slips my mind right now. But anyway, they were making the lefse. We do several sessions of lefse making before our Ludifest dinner, and we serve fresh lefse then. What we will do is fold it up and freeze it in Ziploc bags so that we have fresh lefse on and just thaw it out as we serve it.
What she does is gives free lefse lessons for about 6 or 7 nights to anyone in the community.
Yeah, and sometimes I'll have a dozen people making lefse. And, you know, usually it's between 8 and 12. Sometimes it'll be more. But the reason we only have 3 in this group is that it was the very last one. Every time we'd have the lesson, we'd have to make this batch of dough, and that dough would be ready for tomorrow's lesson. And so you end up with one big batch of dough that you have to cook up. Okay.
So they're free lessons, but they have to leave their LEFSA.
And I tell the people that they're cheap labor. You know, they're happy to come to the lesson. I say, yeah, but you're cheap labor. You can't eat it all. Here's Shirley Wuchter. Shirley's husband, Michael, was a good friend of Larry
Huff,
who, in fact, I think they worked together
at Wittenberg College.
Wittenberg, yeah. And Shirley never knew about LEFSA before she came to First Lutheran. Boy, she's good at it now. Okay, next. And there she is serving it at the Ludifist dinner. Kind of another picture of a bunch of people coming. I mean, we have to serve the LEFSA one at a time, or people will take a dozen of them, you know. And here's a real Danish bread baker. She was born in Denmark, and she's a good friend, and boy, talk about a nice to have someone who can not only take directions and follow recipes, but then she'll help to teach others. And this is what we try to do too, is to get people so adept at what we're doing that they can just turn around and teach others how to bake bread. And here's a guy who, Ken, who, boy, he just loved making bread, and he hadn't really done any quantity bread baking, but he was very, very good at it. This is my very last slide, and I just had to share this with you because it's one of my favorite little kitchen prayers.
We can read it.
We'll read it. Okay, you want to read it yourself?
Yeah.
Until we all learn to live as brothers.
Beatrice, you must print this out for us.
Mm-hmm. Print this?
Yes.
Okay. I altered it a little bit because my original copy said, till all men learn to live as brothers, and I thought, well, we don't need to say men twice, do we? Okay, and that's, we can turn the lights on and go on and do some more discussing here. Who did not get the recipes? Okay. We'll print that out and we'll have it available, okay? I'm glad you said that, because I like it. And here's a listing of books. The LEFSA equipment. Oh, sure. And I want to go through these recipes with you so that you know what is in there. Oh, and I got this as a gift from a friend. I just Xeroxed the picture. But hospitality is love on the loose, and it really goes in with my bread baking theme. I just Xeroxed it, and I have it framed at home. Okay, I'm giving you an example of our Lenten Supper meal. And there are recipes that follow, but they aren't necessarily all, I mean, I don't necessarily include all of the recipes that are in this menu, because we have such a variety. I mean, we could have printed out 50 or more recipes, and that just is too much. I just didn't think we could do that many. But I got some of the more interesting breads. Three grain wild rice sunflower bread. And that's the one that was the very first bread we started making, and people just love the three grain bread, the wild rice bread. We've started making French bread, which is really fun. I mean, this is my personal thing. I want to get this nice crunchy French bread. And so we've been doing that, and making with the French bread dough, we make focaccia with herbs and olive oil. And then there's a raisin troll bread, one that we really invented because we have it on And I didn't get that recipe printed off because it wouldn't come out right on my computer. But it's a Norwegian wheat bread. And then we add to this 16-loaf batch of wheat, whole wheat bread, we add a whole 5-pound thing of raisins. So it's really full of raisins. And that one goes over really well. Then this thing is laid out. We have three identical serving lines, each with that are 2 8-foot tables end to end. And so we'll start with bread, and then we have spreads. And the spreads, the ones that are always there is butter, and we always have to have mustard because we're going to have some sliced meats and stuff. And because we have sliced turkey breast and ham and mozzarella and cheddar cheese, kind of usual stuff, but we get good stuff and cut it up ourselves and find out that it's as economical to do that as to buy the stuff that's already sliced, and it's much better quality. Hummus is always there. Some people, and we always have sliced tomatoes, and I don't know if I wrote that down here, but yeah, tomatoes and lettuce. There's some people that come through the line, and all they'll do is take the dark bread and spread it thickly with hummus with tomatoes on top, and that's all they'll eat, you know. And so people can, because we have a wide variety of foods offered, and you can see there's quite a variety, most people don't end up taking everything, you know, and they can change. They can have a different meal every week, even though we have almost the same kinds of things offered. So that's why the variety is good. And then another reason having a lot of variety is good is because you can serve more people that way. You run out of something, you just take it off the table, you know, or take those empty plates off the table. We've roasted vegetables, and I've got directions for that inside here. We've got some of our favorite breads. Country bread. Two of the soups that we really like. One is we call Revitalizer, and we make it kind of spicy with tomato juice and like V8 juice and tomato juice, and you add spices to it and crushed red hot pepper, and then we put out Tabasco sauce so people can make it hotter if they want. And we usually have two kinds of soup. I've got so many soup recipes that I didn't know which one to put into this collection here. The spreads for breads on the next page. This is one of the favorites, the sun-dried tomato pesto. We call it a torta. But what I do is make three different flavors of cream cheese mixture and then stack them one on top of the other into a kind of a mold. I put a layer of the white cream cheese with garlic and parmesan, and then top that with either the pesto or the sun-dried tomato layer, and then the third layer goes on top of that. Then you cover it up and you refrigerate it until it's nice and firm. And just before we serve, we just unmold it, take off the top, and sprinkle it with a few herbs. And it looks real pretty, and people really do like it. So that's a real simple thing because they're easy, few ingredients.
So then it's stacked?
Yeah. I use a bowl or a bread pan or something as a mold and line it with plastic wrap, mm-hmm. with saran wrap, and then put a layer of each color of cream cheese. I got the idea by just looking at some things that I found in a deli, but they were so expensive. And you can make this for just a fraction of the price, and it's better. So it's a real easy thing, and you can scale the recipe down for use at home. I mean, just use, you know, 3-ounce packages of cream cheese instead of 8-ounce, and then use that as a spread for bread. Then some simple things that we do, and if I would have had a little more time, I might have thought up a few more of these that we do. The fresh spinach and mushroom salad, I think I mentioned that yesterday. Roasted vegetables, which really have taken, people just love them. And I do them at home too, it's my default meal. If I don't know what to cook for dinner, I just go into the refrigerator and I look and see what vegetables we have. And if there's no, you know, sometimes you don't even have to have meat, but I usually might even have frozen chicken breasts, you know, and chop them up, toss them all with olive oil and put them in the oven and roast them. 20 minutes later, you got a meal.
Does it include potatoes on the recipe?
Well, I've got sweet potatoes in there, and then I've got roasted potato spears. We always do those. They kind of look like ranch fries. And those can be done real quickly, or the way that we have our schedule set up at Lenten suppers is, we eat after the service. So I'll put the roasted potato spears into the ovens. Roast the potatoes while we're having our service, so I'll turn the oven down. You can control the length of time it takes for any of these by increasing or decreasing the temperature and increasing or decreasing the time, depending on what's convenient for you. You know, it's more convenient for us to do the potatoes slowly, so we do. But at home, I might throw a couple hamburger patties and potato spears all on the same tray and put them in the hot oven, and they'll be done in 15 to 20 minutes.
How hot?
400, 450, you know. And then in that one picture you saw oven-dried tomatoes. That's another really simple thing to do, and it's putsy, but when you've got a lot of people around, you can hand them this word and say, okay, what can I do? And I say, okay, you take these Roma tomatoes and wash them, split them, and lay them out on the bun pan. And then we'll put them in the oven and oven dry them. That's before we need to use the oven for baking bread. So that's one of the first things we'll do. And then take it out, and they can stay at room temperature. A lot of things are better at room temperature.
So is sun-dried tomatoes just a different variation? I mean, that's doing it naturally, and oven-dried?
Well, the oven-dried, you can do them either way. Now, these are not going to be as dry as sun-dried tomatoes that you buy, you know.
But one sun-dry tomatoes yourself?
Sure.
By putting them out
you
in
can.
The sun?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like tea?
Yep. Just as long as you can flies and the bugs on
right.
them.
Right.
The tomato, Roma tomato halves, well, through the winter, let's face it, tomatoes don't taste all that great. But you can concentrate the flavors and bring out the flavors by roasting them, you know. So that we, and it's something, we need the color. You know?
By roasting or drying?
Roasting them or roast drying them in the oven.
These are, yeah. Yeah, the other recipes I've read for oven roasting tomatoes are like 4 or 5 hours
at
200 degrees and
they don't have to be I should have mentioned this in here. I did this in the convection oven, 250 to 300 degrees, about an hour. That's all you need to do. If you don't use a convection, add 25 degrees. And then they're great to drizzle with balsamic vinegar and extract it.
You said yesterday you do the roasted vegetables too in a convection oven.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, you can do them in a regular oven too.
But add 25 degrees.
But add 25 degrees.
So it'd be 425 would be.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And everybody's oven is a little different.
Right.
They don't all, you know, work the same way. So you have to fiddle with your own oven a little bit too. So you get to know how it'll work. The nice thing about a convection oven is that you can put many, many racks in at one time and they all get done at once.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big advantage there. We bake many layers of bread at one time too. You know, as many as you can shove into the oven. and they all get done at the same time, evenly, you know, which is nice. So what kind of time are we? We're almost toward the end. Are there any other
Do you ever celebrate Lucia Day?
Yeah. Yeah, we've done Santa Lucia. The Santa Lucia celebration is a fun thing. We have friends who are really more into it than we are, but we all have a morning coffee on the day at daybreak. And we go there, and she's got the crown and the whole thing. You know, it's really, really neat. A couple of years ago, I was really privileged to be able to take a tour to Sweden over the Santa Lucia holiday. And that was really fun. Actually, it was Santa Lucia combined with the Christmas markets. And their Christmas markets are kind of the answer to our holiday bazaars that happen about in October, you know. Mm-hmm. But these Christmas markets, have any of you ever experienced them? Mm-hmm. It's just really fun. In northern Sweden, you know, it was like the 8th or 9th through the 15th that we were there on this tour. And because it's kind of not very, the sun kind of just skims the horizon. The highest is about 3 inches above the horizon at noon. And it was really impressive because they have these outdoor Christmas markets. And they'd have their, I've got a bunch of pictures in there of these outdoor markets. It's kind of bizarre-like, you know. One person will have Santa Lucia buns. Another will have marzipan candies and all sorts of fancy things. Other ones will have all kinds of handmade goods, toys, gifts, jewelry, all sorts of stuff like that. And the thing that impressed me about the Christmas decorations and the Santa Lucia, I mean, at that point, they were already decorating for Christmas. They didn't have Christmas trees up yet, but you go, drive through the countryside, and it's all covered in snow, and there's these little red houses with a little white framed windows with candles inside the windows. You know what was missing? The reindeer. You know, the light-up reindeer. You come home and then you see that and you think, oh, it's so garish, you know. But in the simplicity, it was just very, very, very striking. We feel that what's striking is, let's put more stuff out there. You know?
We were in Germany between right after Christmas and before New Year's, and we're surprised to see several houses that had inflated Santa Clauses climbing up the sides.
Oh yeah, snowmen that you can blow up.
Yeah, no, they
have great big snowmen and Santa Claus.
The part of Germany we were in was the warmest part of Germany, so there was no snow.
But wow.
Yes. In New York, where there's less Scandinavian people, there are 7 or 8 ladies who advertise themselves as Santa Lucia ladies. And they tell you, you hire them, and they tell you how to hold the party, and you can get them to bring the food as well, the special Scandinavian recipes. But they come and they dress in the white gown,
the white gown,
the crown, and they come out when all your guests are there. They come out dressed in traditional and serve and host your party for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great catering gimmick for them. Yeah. You couldn't get away with that in Duluth because
you have to do the oldest daughter.
Actually, in Northfield, we have, over the years, a group of friends that have been, they do that. The oldest daughter enacts the whole thing, and they invite everybody for brunch. And we haven't been invited every year. We're kind of acquaintances and not really close friends. But I've been aware of them doing it for 20 years in Northfield.
Mm-hmm. The oldest member of our congregation, she just died a couple of weeks ago, but the year that she turned 90s, her birthday was December 13th, and she's very Swedish. So the year she turned 90, and it happened to be on a Sunday, one of the young women in our congregation, after right at the start of the service, came down the aisle with a crown and the and a bun for Eva.
Yeah. Oh, sweet. That's really, really sweet. You know, these friends that have, they only had two boys. So they have this every Christmas or every Santa Lucia day, but Beth, it's Beth Holst, I don't know if you know her, but Beth and Tim, Beth herself will have her crown on, and her mother is there, you know, she's always there for these things. And then Tim, her husband, is the star boy. So anything that needs to be done, the star boy does. He runs out and does the errands. So they have their tradition, but it's really been a fun thing. There's so many Christmas traditions that one could just do a whole program, starting with Santa Lucia Day and ending up going to through St. Canute's Day in January. That's supposed to end the Christmas season, but 2 weeks after that there's another Saint's Day. And if you haven't eaten up all your Christmas cookies at that time, you've got to invite people over and just eat them up. Anyway, I think I better say that this is good. Thank you for duplicating the recipes, Antonio.